Hey, welcome to episode 237. Hey, by the way, if you missed the talk with Lionel Richie, go back an episode. Pretty cool. This is going to talk to Lionel Richie. Pretty cool. And I get to talk to Lionel on American Idol, his friend, but pretty cool to get to nerd out and ask him about stuff that, you know, you just don't ask friends real career interview type questions when you're hanging out. Mostly it's like, hey, how was that lunch? It's never like, yo, dude, tell me about 1979. Hey, it's like the one impression I can do that were decent, because I do spend enough time with Lionel Richie where I can, hey, you go, my friend, let me tell you, it was 1981. The Commodores were blowing up the charts. So that's like the one impression. I do a better hand than Luke. But go back an episode if you want. You know, I don't know what you're doing. Probably quarantined in. Maybe listen to the podcast. If you want to check out Amy's, it's called Four Things with Amy Brown. Kelly Henderson has the Velvet's Edge podcast, kind of a style and, you know, a life podcast. It's called the Velvet's Edge. And check out Caroline Hobbies. You know, she has one called What's Up?
Get Real.
Get Real.
There you go.
There it is. I was watching her Instagram today, and her husband was playing a song. I think he was going to do one of these acoustic songs everybody's doing.
Okay.
And he starts to play, and there's a snake under him on the picnic table. Oh. She just freaks out and takes off running. Pretty funny. But all jokes aside, check out Get Real with Caroline Hobby. Pretty cool. Where she talks to a lot of the wives of country stars. Interesting. Interesting idea. She talks to a lot of really strong women, but wives of country stars too. This, as you know, is a music podcast. What's great about this one, this episode, is that since everybody's quarantined in, I can basically just go like, yo, you want to talk? And they're like, yeah, why not? So we got Matt Ramsey from Old Dominion coming up, who was going to be in for the first time.
Yeah.
But Corona scare got us. And then Brett Young, who first time to catch up with him, I had seen he was living on his tour bus because his wife and daughter are in his house and he didn't want to get him sick. But he can tell you that story coming up. So I like this episode. It's two artists, Brett Young first, Matt Ramsey from Old Dominion second. And if you like this and you don't mind, share this and tell your friends and give us a 5-star rating. Before we go, let me encourage you to check out Mike's podcast. If you like movies, Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. Seeing some growth in the numbers over there, man.
Yeah. I love doing it. So people have been checking it out.
I tell you, I have a friend that works for Nat Geo. He's one of the big dogs there. His name's Terry. I don't know if he going to hear this or not, but he sent me a note talking about listening to your podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, big wig. He's like, really, I like him because he's just a fun guy to talk to, and our sensibilities are pretty similar. And he's worked with like Howie Mandel. He's worked with a lot of really cool people. But now he works on the talent side at Nat Geo. And he's basically the guy that was like, hey, you know, whenever I did Bear Grylls, mm-hmm. you know, it was him and Courtney Monroe, the president there, that really vouched for me. But anyway, he hit me up. He was like, I like that Movie Mike's Movie Podcast.
That's awesome.
I didn't even ask him what he's listening
That's
to.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So check it out, Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. What's the last episode you did?
So I have a quarantine movie playlist. So a bunch of like franchises you can binge right now. I recommend some.
Okay. Whew, movies are tough to binge.
But you have time right now.
Morgan.
The Star Wars movies.
Watch all 9 Star Wars movies in a weekend. Crazy. Okay, check it out. Here is today's podcast. Here's the latest episode. I hope you like it. And if you do, go check out some old ones. We got a lot of good ones up here for some of your favorite stars. All right, bye. Yo, dude.
What's going on, man?
How you doing?
Oh, you know, just same thing, Groundhog Day over here.
Like everybody. You know, I saw some of the stuff where you're on your tour bus. Are you out there for a reason? Let's say you don't get your wife and kids sick, or what's the story behind that?
Yeah, because we were at that festival in Europe, and one of the shows was in Berlin, like right when the big outbreak hit over there. And so, like, when I got home, you know, we came home early because the travel ban hit halfway into our trip. But I had been to like Amsterdam, Berlin, Stockholm, and Oslo, and I'd been on like 6 planes. And I was just like, you know, if this can take 14 minutes for symptoms or 14 days for symptoms to show, like, I feel fine now. But what if I start having symptoms and I'm already holding my baby and sleeping in bed with my wife? And I just didn't want to take the risk.
Well, how mature of you?
Yeah, well, I can fake it sometimes.
Hey, what was that like when you're in Europe and, you know, in the early part of Corona, and we're kind of figuring out that it's a pretty real thing and, you know, some of our institutions are going to be moved because of it and you're out of the country. What happens to you while you're over there?
Yeah, it was pretty scary. The second show was Berlin. And the afternoon of the show, like 3:00, their government came out and said, like, no gatherings of, I think it was 500 at the time or bigger. And I don't know how, because that was at 3 o'clock. We still played the show. I headlined, I think it was like 4,000 people. So I don't really – that was kind of scary, because they're saying it's not safe to have that big of a group, and we're just playing our show anyways. But I think, you know, as it went on, that was the beginning of other governments starting to put that restriction on public gatherings and stuff. And by the time we were in Oslo, we had one club show left before we were going to go to the UK and play the other big three arena shows. And like an hour before the show, their government came out and said, like 50 people or less. And we're going, okay, this is like, we're being irresponsible by staying over here. And so we actually booked our flights home like 2 hours before Trump came out with the travel ban. So it was, I mean, I don't think it's, I think people over here think that it's a little bit crazier over in Europe. It felt kind of the same. Everybody's anxiety is kind of palpable, just like it is here right now. But it was just weird to not be home and know that you were running the risk of maybe getting stuck over there.
Did you ask how much those flights cost to get back, or did you just go get me home?
Oh, dude, I know how much they cost. It was definitely a low blow.
Yeah, you don't want to share?
I mean, I no. It's honestly, I don't want to. Yeah, it's hey, I will say this, because we booked ours 2 hours before the travel ban.
Yeah,
we got them before they went up to like an unreasonable number.
Yeah,
I know some people that waited. I know ours doubled from when we bought them to 2 hours later.
And who makes that call in your group? Was it you going, "Hey, we got to go"?
We had our finger on that button the whole time. And it was the club shows I was playing in Stockholm and Oslo were just me and my music director. So just two guitars, little acoustic clubs. And so my manager was actually on that run. There were just four of us. And it was kind of me and my manager like watching the news on the regular. But we both looked at each other when the Oslo, we're at the venue and the show got canceled and we went, we got to go. It was like you make eye contact with somebody and you know you're on the same page.
Yeah.
It was one of those deals. So, yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have pulled that trigger without me, but it was something that we knew was a possibility the whole time.
So you get off the plane, and since you knew all this was happening, you didn't hug your wife or kiss your baby or anything like that?
No. So all I did was I went home. I left all my luggage, my backpack, my suitcase, everything in the garage because it can live on surfaces for 3 days. I undressed in the garage, showered, threw my towel straight into the laundry, threw stuff in a bag, and drove to the bus.
What are you doing for food? Is it not the stock? You don't have like, I mean, maybe Cheerios from bus stock, but I'm like, well, how are you eating?
We had some stuff. I had probably 2 days worth of food, but then I've been doing Instacart, like grocery orders, and just having them leave it outside the bus and then wiping down every item with wipes one at a time before I bring it into the bus.
I'm assuming you feel all right, healthy, right? You're almost done with this, right?
I feel great. Yeah, I don't have any symptoms. And, when I decided to do this, they were still saying it takes 5 days to show symptoms. And then on day two, they changed it to 14. And I was like,
oh, no.
So I thought I was coming for 5 days. Joke was on me.
Are you doing any solo riding while you're on the bus?
I've kind of messed with it a little bit, but I'm, you know, with everything that's going on, and like, there's a ton of business decisions to be made right now as shows are getting postponed and moved and all of that. That like, it's been hard to put on the creative hat. I definitely have a guitar in here that I've been like fooling around with, and it usually ends up just not going anywhere because I got too many other things on my mind. So once I get home and I've got a Wi-Fi situation, I'm going to start doing like virtual writes and stuff. But I haven't really had the bug to be creative.
If you don't have Wi-Fi or a strong signal, are you able to watch Netflix?
Yeah. So luckily, the streaming thing's not happening, but our DirecTV package has like all the movie channels.
Oh, cool.
So I've seen every movie in the world now.
Well, what's good? What'd you watch that was good? Because I'm struggling now a little bit. Except for Tiger King on Netflix, I'm just searching around.
Yeah, so once I get home, Tiger King's my wife's already started it and she's digging it. I don't know if you follow my socials, but one day I literally watched all of the Rockies in one day. that was great.
What's the best one? Because I have my feelings. Best Rocky.
What's the best one?
Yeah, we'll both pick one. Which is the best Rocky?
It's hard to say. But I think Rocky IV with the Russian is my favorite.
Me too. I'm Okay, let's go to the second best one. And you can put the Creeds in there if you want. What's the second best Rocky?
So honestly, if we can do Creeds, so like all of them, including Rocky Balboa and Creeds, right?
Yeah.
I would go Rocky IV, then the first Creed, then Rocky II.
Interesting. I think I put the first Creed second as well. Rocky II is good because he wins, right? Like, not spoiler alert, folks. If you're out there, this first Rocky was made in like 1979 or 1980. So if you haven't watched it by now, just suck it up.
But exactly,
because he loses the first one to Apollo, right?
Yeah,
they're in the hospital.
On a decision, right?
Yes, and then he wins.
That's why they fight again, because Apollo like isn't satisfied with that.
And so then 3 is the awful one with Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. I didn't really like that one that much. Did you?
No, not at all.
And I didn't really care for the one, and you may like this one, but the one where Tommy Morrison comes, I don't know that I loved that one. I liked it. I don't know that I loved it, though.
Yeah, Rocky Balboa. That was fun.
What'd you think about the one where he comes back and he's old?
What was that one called? What was that one called?
I think Rocky V was with Tommy Morrison. I think Rocky Balboa is where he comes back and fights.
You are correct.
Yeah.
You are correct, yeah. Rocky Balboa is the one when he comes back. And they did the virtual fight, and then he went to Vegas and fought him.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pushing it at that point. Like, it was already pushing it with Rocky V. He's already too old for that to be believable. But with Rocky Balboa, I was like, guys, come on.
I was thinking,
what was that whole, like, if you fight again, you could die, but then he passes all his tests and gets cleared by the boxing commission.
If you go through the physical, you're not going to die. That's the whole point of the physical. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I also struggled a bit with the second Creed in that I started rooting a bit for the Russian son because he was not treated well. And he was only like he was because he was treated like garbage.
Yeah. And you felt bad for him that his mom abandoned him too.
Yeah. Right? And so I didn't really know. And then Creed is all like rich. I like Creed 1. I loved Creed 1. I liked Creed 2. How do you fall on those two?
Yeah, same. One was better.
Yeah. Have you seen the Godfather movies? Because those are movies I have not gotten into. I've never seen them. But just like you watched Rockies, I've been thinking about hopping into The Godfather.
Yeah. It's been years and years. I haven't revisited them. But like back in college, I like them. I'd rather watch Scarface than Godfather.
I see. I've never seen that one either. But Scarface, is that a series or just one movie?
If they did more than one, I don't know about it.
Oh, it is?
I mean, not to ruin it for you, but yeah. The way the first one ends, I don't know how they could.
Well, and it's not ruining it. If any movie's over 15 years old, you know, it's just on me to have not seen it. Well, that's interesting. What else?
They fill him with bullets over a giant pile of cocaine on his desk in his house. That's the end. So. Mm.
Well, Mike, should I still watch it then since I know the ending?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great movie.
Okay.
You definitely should watch it. I think you should watch it. It's a full blown like gory gangster movie that is hilarious. Al Pacino is hilarious.
So what else are you doing in the bus? Talk about business. Are you trying to figure out how to reschedule these shows and what you're going to do whenever we do come back?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, our big thing is that we don't want to cancel anything. So it's all about trying to move them. And we also don't want to make announcements that they're moved or postponed until we know where we put them. So we're trying to actually get them on the books for a different date before we even let anybody know for sure that it's not happening. So it's tricky because, you know, really everybody that's having to cancel anything or move anything March, April is all trying to squeeze them into November, December. So you have every act in the business trying to find venues for those last 6 to 8 weeks. And so it's been pretty interesting, but there's a lot of that, and there's all of us carry like a pretty big load of rentals, whether it's like buses or semi trucks or musical equipment and stuff, and trying to come to some sort of agreement with these companies that, you know, hey, you can add X amount of months on the end of our contract if you give us a break right now while nobody's making money, and we're trying to stretch what we have out as long as we can, so in case this thing goes longer than we think it will, because nobody knows that we'll still be around and be able to afford to get back on the road.
I know tickets to the Chapters Tour are available now. But I guess a good thing is it wasn't supposed to kick off till April 16th, right? And we're not there yet, so if you don't have to make a decision, why would you? I'm talking about in your place right now. You can kind of sit for a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the second half of it. So unfortunately, you know, there was a date at the end of March that in Arkansas that we had to move already, and there were and then the second half started on the 16th. And so yeah, like you said, hopefully,
yeah,
you know, in a perfect world, May 1 is what we're looking at to get back on track. And they're saying that's the earliest, and that August is the latest. I'm hoping for the earliest, but you know, even if Trump kind of changes what we're allowed to do publicly, I bet you public gatherings is going to be the last thing to get cleared.
Yeah, it'd be tough to go, all right, we've just been given a controversial clearance. Let's everybody get together. That'd be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw.
And nobody's got, anybody that doesn't already have a ticket that's paid for are probably not spending money after they've been out of work for 2 months on concert tickets.
That's a good point, too.
It's interesting. It's scary.
I was looking at this playlist you put up. That's Brett Young, quarantined with 112 songs, 65 hours. And it's a lot of your songs, a lot of your favorite songs that people submit their songs. I was kind of looking through the list a little bit. But I'm trying to get a feel for you as like what you listen to when you're alone. Like, who is your favorite artist of all time?
Of all time, yeah. Gavin DeGraw.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How cool that you get to be friends with your favorite. I knew he was a big part of, you know, your music and you really liked him. I didn't know he was your favorite, though. That's cool.
Yeah, his songwriting is very unique and interesting to me, and his voice is I could listen to Gavin sing forever. It was very cool that we crossed paths and got to become friends, and we worked together a little, because that's definitely like working with one of my idols. So that's definitely top of the list. There's a guy, though, that I met a couple of years ago playing the ASCAP stage at Sundance in Park City. And he has a song out right now that everybody's loving called If the World Was Ending with Julia Michaels. But his name is JP Sachs, and he has a new EP out, and all the songs on his EP are on repeat for me right now.
So you know that dude.
I mean, yeah, we met. Well, like I said, we met doing an ASCAP event a couple years ago, but we've been in touch recently about getting together and writing when he's in town. But there's just something really like honest and straightforward about his songwriting, and he's got a really cool voice. So I've been kind of mainlining JP Sachs lately.
Well, let me go back to Gavin for a second, because I think of the people that I love and I've been able to work alongside or do some stuff with them. And you know, it's always an interesting thing to be a peer to someone that you admire. When you meet Gavin for the first time, do you remember that?
Yeah, the first time I met Gavin, well, that's kind of a yes. So I was at his show. He was on a co-headlining tour with Avril Lavigne, and I was living in LA, and they played the Greek Theater. And Gavin, I don't know if he still does this, but he always used to go out and listen to the opener, just stand in the crowd, and if people approached him, they approached him. And that night she was on stage, and I was with a couple of my cousins, girls, both younger than me, and we saw him, and we went over and introduced ourselves and took pictures with him and stuff. And my cousins drove back to Orange County. I went out to a nightclub after the show, and me and my buddy at like 3 o'clock in the morning were eating at Mel's Diner on Sunset. And we were out on the patio, right along the sidewalk on Sunset, and Gavin came walking down the street, and I yelled at him and stopped him, and we had a conversation. I was just about to go into the studio to record my first EP ever. This was like 2004, 2005 maybe. And he stopped for 20 minutes at 3 o'clock in the morning and asked me questions and gave me advice about, you know, recording the EP and about songwriting and the whole thing. And fast forward a year later, and I'm in Hawaii for a U2 concert. I find out Gavin's playing for the Honolulu Marathon at the Waikiki Shell. And same thing. He's standing out listening to this ukulele player before I walk up to him. And he's like, dude, I remember you. Mel's on Sunset.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe that he remembered, but he was like, dude, it was a crack up. He's like, I hate Hawaii. It's terrible. It's all tourists. What are you doing later? Let's get a beer. I'm staying at, I forget if he was staying at the Long Border or whatever. But we ended up hanging out the rest of that trip, going to the U2 show together, and we've been buddies ever since.
I have a good Gavin DeGraw story where we were at the airport, and we were on the same flight flying back from Los Angeles. And just to show how nice of a guy he is, we're flying back, and he's in the seat behind me. And we're talking a little bit, but it's that awkward thing where you don't really want to turn around and have the conversation through the hole in the middle of the seats. But you're like, hey, man, you good? Yeah, you good. And he had just done some charity work. We did some charity work together. And we come off the plane about the same time. So we're talking on the way out. And Gavin's a super nice guy. It's funny that you mentioned that you just went up to him, because in the airport, he stops and talks to anybody who wants to come up. And it's just saying hello to anybody and everybody and just a smile on his face. And we're waiting for our bags of baggage. And I'm taking pictures with a few people. He's taking pictures with a few people. And I'm you know, and people are like struggling to take pictures. And, you know, if someone's like, hey, can I get a picture? And they give their phone to somebody and they're like, oh, crap, I got to flip the camera. All this stuff's happening. And he pulls me aside and he goes, hey, man, I'm going to give you a little advice on these pictures. Because I was just taking pictures with people, but it was taking me a lot longer than it was him. And he said, hey, what you do? He said, just grab their phone and go, hey, let's get that selfie. And just go boom, boom, and hand them their phone. That way you can get more people on the line faster. And also they're not like, I can't flip my phone. You avoid all of that trouble of them not knowing how to handle their phone. And so that was my Gavin DeGraw advice. So we both have been served a little bit of Gavin's sage wisdom.
Yeah, he is the king of the meet and greet. I got to give him that. He won't leave until everybody that got their picture is happy.
Do you feel like, speaking of meet and greets, that you're going to do yours different from now on as far as just touching as much and hugs and pictures and stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. We definitely, while we were over in Europe, we canceled all the meet and greets. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to look. I mean, the tour that I'm on has a VIP meet and greet package, so I don't know that canceling it is an option. But it's got to change somehow. It's got to be like, you know, no shaking hands or it's got to be something. It's got to change a little bit.
Social distance meet and greet
until we flatten the curve, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, do you watch the news a lot or no?
Yeah, but lately it's been like a lot of the same information, and it started to become kind of a downer. So I do like a before bed check in rather than watching it all day long at this point.
Do you ever listen to your own music and you're in the bus? You turn it up and have a Brett minute.
Unless it's new and I just wrote it. Otherwise, I take a break from my voice as often as possible.
Last time you were in, just to kind of catch up, you hadn't had the baby. You had the baby right afterward. Like, what's the difference in life right now?
Everything. Nothing is the same. Even being here right now, like, I bet I would have let my wife decide, but I bet I would have gone home. And if she got it, we would have it together, you know?
Yeah.
The virus I'm talking about. So, like, even down to that. But I think it changes. You know, I used to be a really, like, late night, like, night owl guy. And then I would, because I could sleep in, because shows, you know, I don't have to be into soundcheck till like 2. And it's now it's like, because you have to be up in the morning with the baby, you're getting tired earlier. And it's like, even on the road now, I get off stage and I used to need a little time to, like, you know, let the kind of adrenaline come down. And it's like half the time now I walk off stage, walk back, change into like clean clothes and fall into bed. So it's definitely, I'm definitely adulting nowadays, which is not something I was used to.
I'm looking at a picture of your baby here on your Instagram. By the way, it's Brett Young Music. Who do you see in your baby's face more, you or your wife?
I still think it's more me, but when she was born, the first month, it was my twin. I mean, she was exactly me. I'm starting to see, even though she's my coloring, she's got lighter skin and light eyes and light hair. I'm starting to see more of like the shape of my wife's face. I think she has like a lot of Taylor's features, but she has all my coloring. So it's starting to become more of a blend. But I think if you ask people at this point, they'd still say more me.
How's Taylor doing having to be the sort of single mom right now?
She's doing great. Luckily, her mom was in town visiting when this whole thing went down. And because her mom's in that like mid-60s age range, which is like high risk, we decided that it wasn't safe for her to fly. And especially they live like in the Seattle area, which is like Washington is the worst right now. So it worked out great that she's been able to have her mom there helping while I've been on the bus. So she's doing good. I'm sure she's excited for me to come be able to help and take on part of the load, but it's been nice to have grandma there.
I'll give you one more question before we jump, but it's about songwriting. Yeah. Something new that happened in your life, which is your baby. Are you writing songs now with new intentions because there is something new in your life?
Absolutely. You and I have talked about this before. I never want to write in a way that would come across pandering. You know, like, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to put out a lullabies record because I just had a baby. You know, like, that's just not how it's going to work. But at the same time, authenticity in songwriting has always been really important to me. Like, if I'm not writing about something I've been through or at least associate with or relate to, then I don't think I can expect people to like connect with the song, you know, if I'm not connected with it. And so the best way to do that is to write about your life. And obviously the biggest thing that's happened in my life lately is that we had our first child. So it's definitely influencing the rights. There is a song that I've written for her that we're closing the tour with now. That'll come out when my next project comes out, whenever that is. So it's a tricky balance because it's going to affect and influence my songwriting, but I also want to make sure that, you know, I don't write 12 songs about my daughter. You know, there's people out there still having their heart broken that want to hear the quintessential heartbreak song, or the people that need that wedding song. And so I want to make sure there's a little bit of something for everyone, but she's definitely, life has changed forever and it will affect songwriting moving forward for sure.
Well, dude, I'm glad to hear you're doing well. I'm glad to hear you have no symptoms, and very mature of you to chill on the bus. I don't know if I would have been so mature. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks, bud. It's always good talking with you.
All right, Brett. Talk to you soon, bud. Hey, we're rolling already, so anything you say can and will be used against you.
Just right out of the gate. I like it.
You know, no need. Hey, you know what? I was talking to Trevor. I saw him a couple weeks ago, really before all the corona stuff, like, really hit. And I went up to him. We were at a charity event together. And I was like, hey, dude, you guys had pulled out of the Country to Country Festival. And I was like, man, kind of, you guys were the first ones to do that. Kind of the cutting edge of pulling out of festivals. Like, you guys knew what was coming.
Yeah, man, we had a little, I don't know, man. We talked about that for a long time. And it was not an easy thing to do. And we knew we were going to catch some flack for it, but it just, man, felt like the right thing, especially, you know, when we started talking about like our crew and stuff, because I mean, partially that was a big part of the decision, because those guys don't have any like gain for going over there. You know, it's not like they're not getting paid more for going over there. They're not, you know, we're just kind of putting them over there, and at the time it seemed like we were putting them in a little bit of risk of maybe getting stuck or maybe not getting home as easily as possible. And it just, there was just so much uncertainty around it that we just made that decision. I'm glad we made it. It sucks that we pissed some people off, but you know, we just did it, and now we look like we knew something was coming. But
yeah, you're like the Nostradamus of freaking touring bands.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you bring up the crew guys. I was reading an article on Billboard today, and it was talking about coronavirus and the vulnerability of the gig economy. And it's, you know, who's suffering, and everybody's suffering, but all those guys. And I can tell you, my deal is I felt like I needed to pay, because I just have a tour manager, right? I do stand up, have a very little crew. You guys have a ton, but I had probably right. 8 or 9 dates, and I was able to pay her because she was one person. But what a lot of people don't know is you have a whole team that is traveling with you who is, some of them are gig paid, right?
Well, most of our, yes, some of them are. Most of them are on salary at this point. So right now, everybody's good.
Oh, really?
Hopefully, you know, we're trying to ride this out to the very last minute. Like right now, it looks like everybody's good, everybody's taken care of, nobody's working, but right now we don't really have anyone that is scrounging for a paycheck, so that we're fortunate in that, you know, in that way, that we have gotten to a point where we could, you know, pay our employees the way we do and keep them in their homes right now.
Well, let's rewind a little bit though, because let's say it's a year and a half ago, or it's some of these artists that have like a hit, like they don't really have the resources to pay someone a salary yet. And, you know, it's a lot of those guys who are players or guys that are, you know, running monitors who are now going, what the crap am I supposed to do?
Yeah, man, that's, you know, we aren't that far removed from that. And there are a lot of those guys out there. And some of them are, you know, on bigger tours too, tours bigger than us. Like, you know, it's just a philosophy of how you want to pay your people, and neither one is wrong. We just kind of lucked out this way right now that's how we chose. But yeah, for those guys and girls that are out there like humping it and they're getting per show pay, it's got to be really, really scary right now.
I saw a video you posted trying out curling.
Yeah.
what?
Yeah, that was an older video, but that was fun.
Yeah, but what's difficult about that? I'm not saying it's easy because I have no idea. I've just never done curling. I see it in the Winter Olympics. Well, so yeah. What's tough about curling?
Man, those guys, like, if you like talk to the guys that are like super into it, that's the only time we ever did it. There's different releases that you can release that stone and make it curve and all this stuff. I mean, the most difficult part is obviously standing on the ice and not just completely busting your ass. But it was fun. I mean, you know, it's like the sport you can drink a lot of beer while you're playing. It's like, you know, it's like bowling almost. So it's like bowling and shuffleboard. I'm sure like there's people that are super into it that, you know, I don't know. We all sucked at it, but it was fun to try.
What are you doing at the house all day now?
I've been doing a lot of artwork, actually. I went to art school, so I haven't had a whole lot of time in the past decade to do any kind of, like, painting or visual art, and that's what I grew up doing a lot of. So I've kind of dove into doing a lot of that lately.
What did you go with the intentions of doing when you went to art school?
You know, my degree is in illustration. So, but honestly, man, I couldn't really do anything else. I wanted to go to either music school or art school because those were two things that I was super passionate about, but I don't know. I still don't know how to read music. I don't know how to read music, so I couldn't really go to music school. I would have been way behind the curve there. So, so art school was really kind of my only other option. So I was either going to have to like stay at home with my parents, or get a job, or go to art school. So art school was it.
You're telling me you have 8 number ones, and you don't know how to read music.
Don't know how to read. I mean, I can, you know, I mean, I could not sight read a thing. I could not sit down and play, look at some sheet music and play it. No, I couldn't do it. If you showed me a note and said, what note is that? It would take me embarrassingly long to figure it out. I could figure it out, but no, I don't read music. It's all ear.
We'll do the number ones. Of all the number ones, which one kind of fell out the quickest that you wrote?
Save It for Rainy Day was the quickest one. And it's a funny story about that one because that one was written by me and Brad Tersey and our friend Andrew Dorf, who passed away a couple years ago. And back then, we used to write, we had like a sort of standing thing where we would write at 9 a.m. before our regular write. So we would write, our normal write would be scheduled for 11 with whoever, but we would meet at 9 and kind of work on something that we had already started or, you know, start something knowing that we weren't going to finish it. But that day we didn't really have anything. So it was a 9 a.m. write and I was trying to think of ideas before I, you know, went into the write, and I had that idea, Save It for Rainy Day, and I sort of was driving into the write and thinking about it and kind of singing through it, and so when I got there, I kind of sang through the idea, and they were like, yeah, let's do that, and we wrote that in like 45 minutes. It was done.
So when you say you were singing it on the way in, are you just singing the melody? Do you have a lot of the lyrics for the hook? What does that mean when you say that?
Well, I had like, you know, I definitely had the idea of like, the chorus of like the sun's too bright, the sky's too blue, you know, beer's too cold. I had basically the chorus kind of idea mapped out and the melody, but I didn't have, you know, it wasn't like I was playing a guitar, but I just heard it in my head. So when I got there, I just picked up the guitar and said something like this. And there was a song that was inspiring me a lot at that point in time that I've actually written a few songs after that. There's a song called Supply and Demand by Amos Lee that I just couldn't stop listening to, and I just wanted to keep writing songs like that, and that was sort of my inspiration for that song. So So yeah, I was just kind of like hearing the melody and the lyrics in my head, and when I got there, I spit it out to them, and they were like, "Yeah, let's do it." And like I said, 45 minutes, that thing was done.
Yeah, I'm a huge Amos Lee fan. I saw him at the Rhyme. I know Supply and Demand too. I'm just a big Amos Lee nerd. But I saw Amos Lee play at the Ryman probably 6 or 7 months ago, and he had lost his voice completely. And so he's up there, he's grinding it out, he's sick. He can only sing the real low parts because the whole high part of his voice was gone. His cold or his whatever had eliminated that. And he had the crowd singing a lot of his songs, and I just felt bad for him. And I was happy that he stayed and tried to sing it. But I wonder, you're the lead singer. If you have that issue, what is it that you do now?
Man, you just do things. You do what he did. You power through. I've done it, you know, before. It sucks. I sang with the flu and strep throat before, and it was not fun. And it was a heartbreaking gig because we were playing at the Stone Pony in New Jersey, and that's a big like Springsteen like hot spot, and I'm a huge Springsteen nerd, and you know, that was the first time we ever got to play there, and I was so excited, and I ended up having the flu, but I couldn't sing. But usually I just kind of address it, you know, I say something to the crowd and say, look, I at this point, thankfully we have fans that know the words to the songs, and I can say, look, I'm gonna push through this, but I need you tonight. And they all just kind of carry you through. But it does suck. It gets in your head and, you know, gets you down because you want to do the best you can.
You ever do a steroid shot right before and get that pop?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten the steroid shots before. They are magical, but they've got to be terrible for you.
Yeah, I usually crash really hard about a day and a half later, like hard where I feel worse than I did to begin with. But as long as you can get through the show, like that's all it feels like it matters, because people paid money for tickets, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like I'm okay being sick by myself because people didn't lose money if I'm sick by myself.
Right.
And if I'm playing,
they come, and you're harder on yourself than they are. You know, I mean, you could probably get through that show, and no one would even notice if you didn't say anything. But it's still in your head, and in your heart, and you want to do the best that you can, and you know it's such an important and kind of sacred thing when you go out there to do that, and especially the bigger and the crowds get, and you're like, okay, this is people have been looking forward to this moment, you know, all year long, so I got to give it to them, and it sucks to have to like do it sick, but they wouldn't notice half the time.
I brought up 8 Number 1s, and that was just Old Dominion. You know, and you brought up Save It for a Rainy Day, which ended up being, a Chesney song. How many number ones do you have total that are all in the world? Do you know?
That aren't Old Dominion?
Yeah, like Old Dominion plus other artists.
I have...
Because you got 8 with OD.
Right. So then I've got The One That Got Away with Michael Ray. I got Save It for a Rainy Day with Kenny... I got Say You Do with Dirks, Make You Miss Me with Sam.
Holy crap.
That might be it, I think.
That might be it. when did it start to pop for you as a songwriter in town? Like, where people started to actually search you out for rights more so than the other way around?
Oh, man.
Like, after what was it? Maybe not a year, but what did you do where people go, oh, that's good, I'd like to write with that guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a song that we wrote, Trevor and I and Josh Osborne wrote a song called Wake Up Loving You that Craig Morgan ended up recording. And that song changed the game for me in a lot of different ways. But it opened up so many doors for me. Like that was, and for Old Dominion, honestly, that was like the song. That song got me a publishing deal when I needed it, you know, terribly. That song probably opened up more doors than any other song.
You know, that song I remember from the meh, meh, like the alarm.
Yeah.
at the beginning of it?
It was my alarm.
Oh, that was from you? Was that from the demo?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. That song, man, it's crazy. Like, the moment that, really the moment that got me in the mix was this decision to go to Key West for the Songwriter Festival. Have you ever been there?
No, no. I usually have to freaking work at my real job. I'd like to go.
Right. It's fun, but, like, back in the day, this is sort of a long story, but back in the day, I was a stay-at-home dad. I was trying to, like, work and, you know, try to write songs at night and raise my daughter and try to, like, somehow make this happen. And I was feeling very frustrated because I'm not a very good, like, networker. And there are people that are really good at that and that gets them pretty far. And I wasn't really good at that. But I knew that I was, you know, writing stuff that was good, and if I could just get out there, but I couldn't because I had this daughter, and, you know, so I was like, look, the whole town goes to Key West for this songwriter festival. If I could just go down there, then I could spend like 3 or 4 days networking for this thing. So I had no money. I had a friend that, whose brother is a pilot, and he got me a free ticket. And so I was like, okay, I don't have a place to stay, but I'm going to go. I don't care. I'll find a place to stay. I got a free ticket down there. So I got my bag. I landed in Key West. I'm literally walking down the street with my suitcase, and I see a songwriter buddy of mine. His name's Bruce Wallace. And he was like, dude, where are you staying? I was like, I don't know. And he was like, you should stay with me. I have an extra bed. I got a, you know, 2 beds. So I stayed with him. ASCAP covered my meals. Like, I got a, like, box of granola bars that I would eat for breakfast and for lunch. And then ASCAP got my dinner every night. And then I waited until, like, 3 a.m. at this little bar called the Bottle Cap that was kind of an open mic thing to get up and play my song, and I got up and played Wake Up Loving You, and the whole place went nuts. And actually, Brothers Osborne at the time, they were a band called King Billy, and they were the house band, so I got up there with them and played Wake Up Loving You, and that ended up getting me a publishing deal.
Wow.
And set me, yeah, it's amazing.
Let's go back 2 years. Tell me about Old Dominion 2 years ago. Where were you guys? 2018. Like, what was the band thinking? Because that's about the time right before you guys really hit hard.
Yeah, 2018, 2 years ago, was when, it sounds crazy, but that's when Make It Sweet happened. That was when it was time to make the next album. And we thought, you know, what are we going to do? Let's just, usually we have like a list of songs that we kind of have to go in and record. And I had kind of thrown this little tantrum one night at the end of the year about how we didn't have enough time to make an album. And so we needed more time, and our team, who is wonderful, made the time for us. So our first recording session snuck up on us, and we didn't have any songs in mind. We had songs, but we didn't have a plan. So since we didn't have a plan, we had studio time, we decided to go in and write a song and record it in the same day, see what happened. So that was when Make It Sweet happened, and that sort of set the tone for the whole thing. I can't believe it was that long ago, but it was.
What song that you put out did you feel at the quickest?
Did I what now?
Did you feel it the quickest? Meaning like, oh, we got ourselves a hit here.
Oh, it was One Man Band, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, because, yeah, that was like immediate. Like, we went on tour the first show was in Chicago in January, and that wasn't necessarily going to be the next single yet. And we played it, and people were already singing it like louder than some of the hits that we had already had. And it was just kind of like a, you know, grat track at that point. So it was such an immediate response to that song.
Yeah, that's my jam. That's my jam too. As soon as it came out, I remember hitting you up being like, this is my favorite song of my whole life this week.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. That was definitely the biggest one.
Well, listen, man, good to talk to you. I know we were going to do this in studio, but the virus got us, and hopefully it doesn't have either one of us, but we had to throw it down on the phone, so we'll be sure to connect up one day in person. But listen, I'm a big fan of what you do. You know, I'm a massive Old Dominion fan. When it comes to albums, I don't think Band should put them out anymore unless your name is Old Dominion. That's the only album that I care to invest all my time into, because you guys just do hit after freaking hit, and the songs you don't put on your record, other artists take them, and then they have number one. It's like you're just passing out charity hits.
I appreciate it, man.
Well, good to talk to you, Matt, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, man. Stay healthy.
All right, see you, Matt.